Well, good morning, everybody. This is the Business Trust Call for June 23rd, 2017. My name is Carol Werlius. I am not an accountant. I'm not a tax professional. I'm not a so-called guru. I'm not an attorney. But what I am here to talk to you today about is business trusts, which I feel is the best way for all of us to protect the assets that we soon hope to have. A lot of you have asked about my partner, Jim. Jim, as most of you know, had surgery about a year ago. He's coming back. You know, he still has some issues. Let's just say he's semi-retired. But he's in good spirits. He gets around, and I just saw him the other day, and he's doing fine. So I have my friend Judy helping with us today. Are you available, Judy?
Yes, I am, Carol. Good morning, everybody.
So you ready to get started?
I am indeed. Carol, so many of us have heard as recently as this morning that the RV is really close, and I've read that for those of us that have more than a small amount of currency, we need to have a trust. So what is a trust?
Well, a trust is a fiduciary arrangement that allows a third party or trustee to hold assets on behalf of another, and that's a real simple explanation.
Why should I establish a trust, Carol, rather than continue to own my own currency in my own name and Social Security number?
Well, ownership has its downside. You know, when we were kids, when we were growing up, mine was important. But as we are adults, not necessarily. So suppose after you exchange your currency, you're so excited you have a heart attack and die. All that money then becomes probate fodder and open to estate inheritance taxes. It'll be a long, long time before your family sees that money. In another scenario, you're in an automobile accident, some hungry attorneys see you as a meal ticket. Also, ownership puts your assets at risk. Let's say you are alive and healthy, no heart attack, no accident, but for some reason you get sued. If all that money is in your name in Social Security, again, it's some hungry attorney will see you as a meal ticket. So it's better off to keep it as protected as possible.
Okay. Carol, I've heard that the bank will set up a skeleton trust for us. So could I just wait and get the skeleton trust from the bank?
Well, you know, Judy, I've heard that as well. From what I understand, it would be a revocable trust, and you've got, I think, 90 days to set up your real trust. But the biggest issue I have with that is that the bank becomes your partner with trustee authority. I mean, do you really want that?
Yeah, I hear you. I hear what you're saying. Do you think I should choose a statutory trust or a business trust?
Well, a statutory trust is a privilege granted by statute and regulated by the laws of the state in which it was created. The business trust that we prepare is actually a contract in trust format. The right to contract is guaranteed by Article 1, Section 10 of the U.S. Constitution, which most of you know is a common law contract itself. When researching the two, you won't even find a business trust in the T section of the law library, but in the B as in boy section. But the bottom line is pretty basic. It becomes a matter of rights versus privilege. Why should we restrict the operation of our private business to the territory granted by legislative privilege when it's not really necessary?
Okay. So, Carol, what's the most significant advantage of a business trust over any of the other kinds of trusts?
Well, in my mind, the most significant thing is a business trust allows you to be the contract of your own trust. You retain full management, control, and benefit of the assets of the trust. Simply stated, there is no one between you and your money. So with the business trust, it owns the currencies or the money or assets, not you. But you do maintain total and complete control. It's totally private, not required to be registered or filed in any state except Nevada, unless one is actively involved in a business.
Okay. So can a business trust be either revocable or revocable, and what do you think is the best?
Irrevocable means the terms of the trust cannot be changed. No one can force you to revoke the trust to pay someone else. It effectively gives you an empty pockets persona. You know, go back to that scenario a few moments ago about being sued.
Right.
The most significant distinction between revocable and irrevocable trust are these state tax considerations. Property that you place in an irrevocable trust is no longer considered part of your estate, meaning that the property typically isn't included in your estate's value when it comes to determining if you owe death taxes, and if so, how much. It also avoids probate issues.
Okay. I happen to live in a high-income tax state, Carol, Virginia. Can a business trust be legally domiciled in another state, for example, like Wyoming, or just as an example, one without any state income taxes?
Yes, and you know, people ask that question all the time, and is it legal, et cetera, et cetera. People have been setting up corporations and LLCs in business-friendly states like Nevada and Delaware for years. The same is true for business trusts. The seven states do not impose a state income tax. We do prefer Wyoming. You can get a legal address in Wyoming for about $120 a year and domicile your trust there. And I'm happy to send you that information. All you have to do is make a phone call. They will assign you a mailbox over the phone. It's really pretty simple.
Okay. Should I have an address other than my home for the trust?
Well, for people that live in tax-free states, such as I do, Washington, and we have a lot of clients in Florida and Texas, it's not imperative that you have a different address, but it's a good way to protect your privacy and anonymity.
Okay.
Use of an outside address supports your trust for added security and tax benefits. Whether your trust is domiciled in Wyoming or in the city and state in which you live, to convince the powers that be that you are, in fact, operating as a trust with you as trustee, you need to receive all mail and email in the trust name and mailing address only.
Okay.
And people say, why? Why would I want to do that, right?
Right.
A court of law, which most of us know is an actually oxymoron, could claim that you're operating in fraud and that you're personally liable for the actions of the trust and have no protection personally from a lawsuit, claim from an annoyed relative or ex, and the evidence is that you are operating personally, not as an entity. The main factor that they could use in, you are not acting as though you are working for the entity. You are the entity. Commingling of funds, assets, mailing addresses, email accounts, utilities, etc. So you need to be operating at arm's length, but still having operational control. So back to the question, should I have an address other than my home? I have had one for years. I don't know, 20, 25, 30 years.
Okay.
Makes life a little simpler, it really does.
I know a lot of people who do. I did it recently, a couple months ago. I did the same thing because of what I've learned from being involved with you and all your classes. Thank you. Are we limited to opening a business trust checking account in that state, Carol, or can we have a bank account where it's convenient for us as the trustee?
Well, as trustee, you can open an account wherever it's convenient for you. You do not have to go to Wyoming or anywhere else to do your banking. And you can also open as many trust accounts as you like using the same trust in EIN. But be aware, going back to this last question, it's important to remember that all bank statements and other bank mail be delivered to the domicile address. And, you know, this is something that we've all been playing with lately. And obviously everybody wants their trust delivered to their home, which... you know, okay, that's fine. However, going back to proving that you are a separate entity, we are now of the belief that we should be sending your trust to the Wyoming address or wherever your business address is, and then
having them forward it
to you.
Oh.
What that does, again, you know, is prove that that is a domicile. The only downside to this right now is it becomes a few extra days' wait to actually get your trust.
Right.
But when your trust is completed, we always email you with the EIN page and with the abstract of trust. So you have what you need to either go to the bank and open an account, and hopefully you're going to want to use those to go to your exchange, which we hope will be soon. So although it may appear to be a big issue, it's not. So we will probably start doing that pretty soon.
Let me ask a quick little question then about the what you're just talking about, the mail going to, like a bank statement is the example, going to the mail, the Wyoming address, let's just call it that. What happens at the bank if you opt out of paper statements and you only get them via email? Could that be conceived as a conflict? I wonder if you should open
up. Well, I mean, it all depends. You know, what, banks like Wells Fargo, everything's under your email address.
Exactly. You could open up an email address connected to the, make it a trust email. Just
exactly, you can. However, you know, if you have a personal account at Wells Fargo and a trust account, they're going to want to jumble everything under your personal email address. So.
Yeah. Okay, I was just talking out loud, Carol.
But it's a good question because I've had the same question. I mean, I know a friend of mine tried to open an account for her trust several years ago, and she and her husband were having some difficulties. And she said, told the banker, I do not want my husband to know about this account. And he said, sure, no problem, he won't. Well, the very next morning, her husband checked accounts, and there's that brand new account. Because they put everything together at Wells Fargo.
Right, right.
So we have to find a way to separate those accounts from our personal accounts.
Okay, well, that's certainly something we can investigate.
Yeah.
Okay. Do we want to break and see if anybody has a question, Carol?
Well, I don't know. We can give it a shot. Okay, we can break a little while for Q&A. If anybody has any questions, please *6 to raise your hand, okay. And we'll see what we can do.
Okay.
But in the meantime, oh, there we go. Hang on a second. Good morning, Jim. How are you doing today?
Good. How are you, Carol?
Good, thank you.
I do this a lot because I don't like email. And when people ask me if I have an email address, I just tell them I don't.
There you go.
So you open up your account with whatever bank, give them the address. If you don't give them the information, they can't send it to you.
Good point. Very good point. But I think Judy's question was, you know, so many people are opting out of paper statements and to get them with email or even to go online. Yeah, even without email, though, you can still go online. So, good point.
Yeah, but would you want to do that, though?
No. Well, we've all been told once this happens, you do not want this account online ever.
Yeah. Especially your main one.
Yeah. Who wants to take
If you've got another trust that you're just running a fancy car or a piece of real estate under, that wouldn't be that big a deal. But yeah, your main
mother load.
Yes, that was the word I was looking for. Thank you. Your main mother load trust, you wouldn't want any of that out there.
Yeah, that's right. You don't want online access. Good point. Sometimes I get ahead of myself here.
No, I mean, it would be good for your, you know, for your personal account. I guess some people think that. I still get paper statements on all my bank accounts. So, but, yeah, I wouldn't, definitely not on the mother load one.
Yes, I agree. Totally agree.
Well, that was my question at the point.
I'm sorry?
That was my question to this point.
Okay, thank you. Anything else?
Not right at the moment.
Okay. All right. Thanks, Jim. Appreciate that. Okay. Judy, I heard you in the background. Did you have a question or comment?
I was just inadvertently speaking out loud.
Oh, okay.
I was thinking out loud.
See what happens when you do that? Okay, we have another caller here. Good morning, Sherry. How are you doing today?
Hi, this is Sherry. I'm in Oregon. I have a business trust that I got through Carol. I set that trust bank account up in Wells Fargo here where I live in Oregon, but I have the mailing address and everything for the trust in Vancouver, Washington. But now I'm wondering if I should have set that trust up at a bank, at one of the branches in Vancouver, Washington.
Oh, the bank account? At this point, I don't think it matters. However, you can. It goes back to the question, if I'm domiciled in Wyoming, do I have to go there? You should be able to bank wherever it's convenient to you, long as all the mail goes to your address in Vancouver. But for as close as you are, you know, I would take the extra 20, 30 minutes and drive to Vancouver.
Yeah, I just don't know. You know, I've given the access to my bank account to who I will receive money from, and they just are automatically going to deposit the funds in the trust account. But I think that the number on that account links to my local bank here in Oregon.
Your local address, yeah. Mm-hmm.
Yeah, so I'm just hoping that's not going to be a problem now. I don't want to be fraudulent.
No, I don't think it's going to be fraudulent. You know, you just want to, the whole idea about this trust or any other trust for that matter is to protect yourself. And we just need to be sure that we follow all the rules to do that, to protect ourselves.
Yeah. Yeah, I just thought it was kind of, the state taxes are better in Washington than Oregon, so that's what I was advised to do. But
yeah.
And we
don't have state taxes here.
Yeah, yeah. We've got big ones in Oregon. So that's why I did that originally. But I've never received any mail at that address in the mailbox account I set up in Washington. Nothing. Not one piece of mail.
Well, and most people don't. And as I've told people for a long time, the most mail you're likely to get, it might be a notice from the IRS that you haven't filed or something to that effect. Unless you give that address to somebody, such as your bank in whatever city you're in Oregon, unless you give that address to anybody, how would anybody know to send any mail there?
Right.
So in the future, though, when setting up bank accounts, you use that Washington address.
Okay, so maybe go into Wells Fargo and see any correspondence regarding the trust account, please mail to Washington.
There, I think that would be a good solve to that.
Okay, thank you.
You're welcome. Thank you. Hi, Brenda. How are you doing?
Hello.
Hi, this is Carol.
Hi, it's Andrew.
Oh, hi, Andrew.
In Los Angeles. You know, I have a question about about an LLC. Should I do an LLC under the trust or outside the trust?
If you're planning on doing an LLC, which I do recommend if people want to do a business, do an LLC or a corporation, you can have the trust be the majority owner of the LLC. Say you have the trust own 98% of it, you could own 2% of it and be the member manager. So therefore, your liability would be limited to your 2% or 1% that you own.
Okay. So if you did it outside, you'd be fully responsible?
Yeah. I mean, it's still a limited liability company, but if you're the only member, then all whatever liability there is rests with you.
Uh-huh. Is it hard to get a large sum out of the trust for the LLC, or you have
no,
control
you,
of that?
You just write a minute, the trust, you know, meeting of the board of trustees, the trustees elected to become a 98% member of blah, blah, blah trust. As such, they are investing. How do they word this? They're investing assets as listed on Schedule A of the trust.
Okay.
You don't even have to. You don't even have to say how much.
Oh, just the percentage.
Yeah. Percentage of ownership.
Okay. All right.
And
we do have that mention available. I mean, a minute available.
Okay. All right, thank
Hi,
you.
Hi, Andrew. This is Judy.
Judy in Virginia?
Yeah, Judy in Virginia. How are you, Andrew, in L.A.? Nice,
I'm all right, thank
you.
Voice. You
Great.
Too.
Thank you.
Nice to see you. Nice to hear your voice. Thanks.
Thank you.
Okay, thank you. Bye-bye.
Does anybody else have any other questions? Well, I guess not. So, Judy, why don't we continue?
Okay. Carol, Is this business trust considered by the IRS to be a complex trust? And if it is, what kind of tax returns do we file?
Well, you know, complex in this case does not refer to it being complicated.
Oh.
It is referred to as a complex trust, which means that it can make distributions to charitable institutions if it chooses to do so, and it does not have to distribute all of the income that is earned for the tax year, as opposed to a simple trust that has to pay its beneficiaries all of the income it has earned for a year. So in other words, it can make distributions to charitable institutions, make it distributions to certificate holders, but it can still leave a certain amount of money in the trust, and which would be that whatever they do pay out becomes a deduction to the trust. It does. It is required to file a form 1041 if its income was over $600, and obviously we're all going to be facing that next year. So.
Yeah, exactly. Okay, great. So I've heard that we've talked about the mother lode trust. Would you explain to all of us a little bit more in depth what that means?
Yes, I'd be happy to. You know, I talk to a lot of people, and some people will say, well, is this the mother lode trust? The mother lode trust is not a specific kind of trust, but it's a term we use to define your first trust, the one that holds all of the currency or the money. It really should be considered level one of your trust organization. And it's not necessary to have additional business trust right now, but you will more than likely want more post-Harvey. Houses, boats, cars, motorhomes, airplanes, they all have potential liability to them. Putting those items into your mother lode trust puts all of the assets of the trust at risk. So we suggest separate trusts for each house, car, boat, or motorhome, airplane, etc. And I know somebody else is online selling trust a package of 10 for $29.95, something like that. I don't know what kind of trust he has. I don't know what kind of backup he offers. I have heard that he's difficult to reach and can be rude on the telephone. What I can tell you this is you will not get a more complete package of trust and available trust than you will from us. We also have our website to back up everything that we do. We've got well over 250 pages of legal backup on what we do. So I know a lot of you listen to these calls. You say, okay, should I do this one? Should I do that one? That one might be a little cheaper. Actually, it's twice as much money. But you need to consider all the other things just besides the paperwork of the trust itself.
Okay. Carol, how exactly is the business trust created?
Well, the business trust has a few very simple elements. First, you exchange your assets, in this case the title to your currency, with the creator, who is a disinterested third party, who puts them in the trust. The creator then gives you $21 in consideration and evidences the exchange with 100 trust certificate units. The certificate units are your private property, which gives you a right to distribution should there be one. And the certificates become null and void upon your death. The creator then appoints the first trustee. While he or she has the right to appoint absolutely anyone in an arm's length transaction, in all likelihood, he or she will appoint you. I mean, you, after all, were the one that was smart enough to purchase this currency. Wouldn't that make you the most qualified person to manage it?
Of course.
Yeah. So the creator then exits the business contract. He or she has no further authority, responsibility, access, anything to the trust. He is just done, period. And after you have been appointed as first trustee, you may appoint a second trustee. And you and your second trustee appoint successor trustees, continuing the management of the trust in the event of your death or incapacity.
So the creator really is just a person who signs paperwork, and that's it.
Yeah, he or she facilitates the creation of the trust.
Perfect.
And then
okay,
they're gone.
Great. Okay, Carol. How many trustees does an ordinary, regular person need?
How many trustees?
Yes, I'm sorry.
Okay,
I beg
yeah.
your pardon.
Yeah, the trust can operate with only one trustee, and that is not unusual, even in your own case, Judy, you're your own trustee. But however, if in the case of a couple, we recommend both spouses be trustees. Once again, though, another little caveat here, this is not dependent upon the marital community. We have some clients one of them, her husband is impaired. So she chose at the time not to make him a trustee.
Right.
So you should most of the time, but you don't really have to. And you can just operate with one trustee. My application has lines for two trustees. Doesn't necessarily mean you need to fill them both in.
Can one trustee act independently from the other?
No. The trustee must unanimously agree on everything. We do provide an executive trustee minute that allows one trustee to act for and on behalf of the other one. For example, a lot of my clients are planning to fund trusts for their children. Even though these children are grown, they've not been planning on this and making, you know, setting themselves up, et cetera, for many years like so many of us have. But, you know, you give a 35-year-old a couple million dollars, you don't know if they're going to know how to handle that. So what I have suggested to these clients is that, okay, you fund this trust for Bobby, but you become the executive trustee. And Bobby is just, he's there, he's a trustee. But he cannot do anything without you. I mean, you can sign on his behalf, but he cannot sign on yours. So
okay.
It gives the executive trustee just a little more authority to act than the other.
That makes sense. Makes sense to me. Carol, what happens to the trust when I die, or we die, if it's a couple?
Yeah. Well, you died, but the trust didn't. The trust is an entity unto itself. In the event of a trustee's death or incapacity, the successor trustee assumes his or her duties immediately. There's no waiting, no filing, no court approval, no newspaper, no nothing. You just go to the bank and say, okay, I'm successor trustee for my mom. Here's my paperwork. And this brings up another issue. We have been hearing so much over the years about make sure you have POD or pay on death on your accounts.
Right.
If you have a trust with successor trustees, you've already taken care of that. You do not need to put a POD on a trust account.
Oh, that's interesting. Very
interesting. You've already named them.
Instead of POD,
they're successor trustees.
There you go. Awesome. Okay. Carol, my grandchildren are minors. Can I name them as successor trustees?
Yes. But you must also name an interim successor trustee to manage the trust until your kids reach an age you specify. And don't assume that they'll be mature enough at 18 to manage a trust.
Right.
You can also name your kids as advisory trustees, giving them valuable experience in learning about the trust and how it operates. All they are is just to watch, learn, and listen. But it gives them a good opportunity to absorb what you're doing. But they must be made aware that the trust is personal to your family and is not to be discussed with outsiders.
Right. Okay. Can I specify that all successor trustees be my bloodline descendants?
Absolutely. We can add that clause and say bloodline must be proved by any DNA test. What it comes down to, so you name your daughter as successor trustee, but she cannot name her husband. She can name her kids as successor trustee to her, but if anything ever happened to her, it would not revert to her husband. Only it would stay within your bloodline.
Okay. Carol, is this business trust the same as a spendthrift trust?
Not specifically, but again, we can add that distinction if you request it. So nobody can hypothecate or pledge the assets of the trust.
Okay, great. So I'm sure you hear this question a lot as well. How do I pick the name for a trust?
You know, pretty much anything that sounds good to you is okay. Try for a strong-sounding name. Do not use your surname or sequential numbering. You know, for example, my trust number one, my trust number two, because that would indicate that there's more than one. And I also suggest the name of a favorite pet, something reflective of a hobby. A lot of people use something they got from the Bible. My husband often suggests get out a map and close your eyes and point your finger, and whether it be the name of, whether it be a city or street, that might be a very good name for a trust. Do not name your trust the same as an existing business or any name associated with you, because your goal here is privacy and anonymity. So by connecting it to something else, may say, oh, okay, I've heard of that. Maybe we should look under this or look under that. So you want to keep it as private as possible.
Okay, that's obviously good, great information. Carol, how do I, that's not the right question. Do I need to register the trust in my state?
Well, with the exception of Nevada, the trust does not need to be registered unless it is operating as a business. For instance, my business indicator information is a trust, and I am registered in the state of Washington. The trust that I have for my currency is not registered anywhere. And there's no registration, there's no need to check the name. People are concerned about that. Do I have to check with the state to see if that name is already taken? That is not an issue.
Okay. Do I need an EIN number?
If you want to open a bank account and you want to get your money, you will need an EIN number, and we will obtain it for you.
Awesome.
Back to the naming, and this goes in the same place. Once in a great while, somebody will choose a name for a trust, and I will not be able to get the EIN for it. Oftentimes, it just requires adding an S to it, changing the spelling a little bit, and it's weird. I mean, some of these things, I think that'll never go through. It goes right through. Other things that seem to be simple have been stopped, and I think whatever name it is just might be a little too common. So, but in any event, we will obtain your EIN for you.
Okay, great. Carol, earlier you mentioned certificates. Why are there extra certificates in the back of the binders that the trust is in?
Well, as I said earlier, your trust certificates become null and void upon your death. The remaining or successor trustee then issues a new cert to themselves or others of yours or their choosing. Now, when you get your trust package from me, every line that requires a signature will have a name under it and a little post-it note. The remaining two certificates, 3 and 4, do not. So you do not have to fill that in. You don't ever have to even be concerned about those certificates in your life. Your successor trustee is the one that takes over and fills them in.
Okay. Is this business trust difficult to operate, Carol?
Well, our business trust package comes with the complete operating instructions and access to our members-only website. There are, however, a few important considerations. For example, when signing anything relating to the business trust, you must sign it as John Doe, trustee, and not as otherwise. That statement limits your personal exposure. One of the instructions that I send along with the trust is how to order checks. And also on your checks, operating strictly as trustee and not as otherwise. So, again, you're limiting your personal exposure. But it's not difficult to operate. In all the years that my husband and I have been selling trust and Jim Jenkins has been selling trust, you know, we get phone calls maybe for the first week or two. And after that, people pretty much have figured out. And
okay.
Now with the website that we have, we've got not only samples, minutes, and resolutions, but also a lot of how-to in there.
Awesome. So, Carol, I'm curious, how do we get money out of a business trust? Judy's got her trust, got it fully funded after their RV, and I want $500,000 out. How do I get that out?
Well, there's several ways. Well, let's actually start with that one. You know, we've all heard that this is likely not to be taxed.
Correct.
So people said to me, well, if it's not a taxable event, why should I put all my money in my trust and then have to pay tax on it when I take it out?
Exactly.
And that makes sense. So my suggestion, and folks, this is just my suggestion. Like I said, I'm not an accountant. I'm not the tax professional. But my suggestion is, okay, Mr. Banker, now that we've exchanged all these funds and I have X million dollars, I would like you to place $500,000 in my personal account. Here's my wiring instructions, and here's my account number. I would also like to, I've got some debt to pay off. I would like cashier's checks for these people or wires for these. I understand you can get five of each. That way you've cleared a bunch of money to begin with, okay? And you also want to walk out of there with, I think the limit now is $7,500. You also want to walk out with some cash. That's an initial way to get some money out before it becomes a taxable event. And then you want the rest of it to go into a trust account. But other ways to get money at ongoing, you can, and I believe should, take a salary.
Okay.
And you, as trustee, can declare a distribution to the certificate holders. And both of these methods, of course, are taxable events. The trust can also pay some expenses for you, like medical reimbursements, business investments, etc. For instance, you can visit a foreign destination, pick up brochures, business cards, etc., and have the trust pay for most of it. I mean, I wouldn't have the trust pay for the new clothes for the foreign destination trip, but the trust can pay for most of it, probably 80%.
Okay.
And the trustees also have the authority to lend money occasionally, with or without interest or security, except that no loan can be made to any trustee individually or any current certificate holder without fair security. And if there is a loan, there needs to be a promissory note, and payments do have to be made, even if they are just interest payments.
Okay. Can a trust forgive a debt, like a grant, like a foundation can?
I don't know.
What do you suggest?
That I do not know.
Okay. Okay, wow. So you earlier you mentioned additional trusts. How are they funded?
Well, the mother lode trust can create and fund other trusts, and that does not create a taxable event. And we suggest this message for purchasing high-ticket items like real estate, vehicles, et cetera. Judy, do you think we ought to see if we have any more questions?
I think that's a fabulous idea, Carol.
Okay. anybody have any additional questions here? Just star 6 to raise your hand. No, I guess not. We'll just continue, Judy. All right, we're on... What are we at, number 27?
Can the trust make investments?
The trust can do anything a legal adult person can do, including investing, operating a business, lending money, etc. It's important to remember that all business transactions, including buying and selling property, stocks, bonds, securities, and other investments, insurance, furniture, appliances, computers, electronic equipment, etc., is to be agreed to and voted upon by the Board of Trustees and recorded in the minutes. Any and all investments, purchases, etc., should be done in the name of the trust. Now, we do have another question here, so hang on.
Okay.
Hi, Jim.
Hello again, Carol.
Hi.
I got actually several questions. When... I have the mother lode trust. After this happens, it's my thought that I want to put together other trusts for children and grandchildren. I would like, because none of them know how to run this, I would like to be the executive trustee. Is it best to have them as secondary and they're not aware of it? So
no,
that
they
if
can't
something...
Be not, they can't be not aware of it.
Okay. But I don't want them to, unless they know, until they know how to do this and run it, I don't want them to be in control of it. So make myself as the only trustee and then they are successor trustees?
You could do that. And then name them as trustee when you feel they have the maturity to handle it. And you can tell them, okay, Jimmy, I'm setting up this trust for your benefit. However, I'm still in charge.
Yeah, and you can tell them you're going to teach them how to be more than just a a recipient. You'll teach them how to learn it, how to do it.
I agree.
And then if let's say I put $2 million in each one, I can put a limit on what they can take out annually. Correct?
Well, if you don't have them as trustee, I mean, you're setting your own limits.
Okay.
Or you can set them up and what? Say, this trust is for your benefit, and you can take a salary of $1,000 a month, period.
Okay, what I'm looking at, and this is the part that worries me, because I know everything that you read about people that have become wealthy, they wind up with a target on their back. I don't want that target. One of the things that I was looking at is I want to set it up to where I'm giving everybody $1,000 a month in some fashion, and I really don't know how I'm going to set it up yet. But I want to give them $1,000 a month, and if they want more, they can come to work for my foundation or one of the LLCs that I have up and going. But I'm not just going to give them $100,000 a year because they're related to me.
Oh, I know.
They need to earn that. And even though it was my original thought is to put $2 to $2.5 million into a trust and have each one of them have a trust and them be the successor. But I'm kind of at a loss as the best way to put that, to set that up, because I would like to be back at the, okay, I'm going to, let's say January 1st, I sit down and I write out 12 checks, put them in an envelope, and then every month I mail them that check to where, you know, they get that $1,000 check on the first of the month. And that's all they get unless they come to work and earn more. I guess I'm trying to figure out what the best way to do that without painting a target on my back.
Carol, wouldn't he be better off to, instead of have 12 trusts, to have like one like Grandpa's Trust or something like that?
That would be a way to facilitate the $1,000 a month to each kid, yeah, rather than having 12 different bank accounts.
12 different trusts. Yeah.
That would be a way to facilitate that. But, again, you're concerned about having a target on your back. And I think you
just
and I
don't
talked
tell
about
people.
Before, yeah, because your kids are, somebody's going to say, oh, where's all this money coming from? You know, Grandpa's loaded all of a sudden.
Exactly.
Yeah.
First
you know, and when they see me drive up in front of their house in a Bentley, they're
going to
know
it.
Yeah. Yeah, they're gonna and all of a sudden I live on the lake and I'm driving a Bentley. They're gonna figure something out.
Yeah, well,
Jim, what are the ages of these children you're discussing?
Well, I mean, I have a son that's 41, and then I have stepkids that are late 30s to mid 30s, and then I have grandchildren that are as young as 5.
Right. Well, the adults, can't you sit down with them in a, you know, private place and tell them the importance of not divulging family business? And if they do, I've got the same situation, not with as many folks as you do, but I have the same situation.
Mm-hmm.
Well, I'm going to take Carol's advice. God, I get a paycheck from the trust. I don't own anything. I don't own anything. Nothing's in my name. I can't give anybody anything without going to the board of trustees. So I'll get back to you on that.
And I've thought about that, but most of them, well, not the kids, but the adults, they know that I've done this because I've told them to do it, but they haven't. Nobody else has invested in the foreign currencies. So they're going to know where this came from. They're going to know that, you know,
Will they know how you set yourself up?
No, they won't.
There you go.
That's what I'm trying to do is trying to figure out the best way to set this up to where they don't look at me as in, you know, wow, he's got all that money. If he were dead, it's going to come to me because I'm his only kid.
Yeah.
You know what I mean? And I've my ultimate goal when they ask me, well, how come I got this $1,000 check? And my ultimate goal is to be able to look at all of them and say, as long as I'm still alive, notice the signature on the bottom of that. As mm-hmm. long as I'm still alive, you're going to get that check. If you want more than that, you got to come to work for me. But, and I'm trying to figure out where the best way around that. Because at that point, they're going, wow, you know, dad or grandpa or whoever is going to give me $1,000 a month as long as he's still alive. At that point, everybody's standing there. If I have a heart attack and I'm in the hospital, everybody's going, come on, you can make it. You can make it. You can make it.
You're right.
Not, oh my God, I hope he dies. I hope he dies. I hope he dies. You know what I mean?
Yep.
And nobody knows where the mother load money's going. You know what I mean?
Mm-hmm.
And honestly, the mother load money is going to charity.
Yeah.
So that's why I was hoping to set something up. I mean, let's say you put $2.5 million in an account, in a trust, and put it in an account and it's making 5%. That's astronomical money, especially if it's the grandkids and they're not touching it for 15 years.
Right.
So,
Jim, is it okay with you if share the solution that was my dilemma, not dissimilar from yours? I never worried that anybody would kill me or wish me dead, but I simply solved the problem by giving my adult children, of which there are two, each foreign currency. I gave them a substantial amount, dinar, dong, and a zim. And I decided what was best for Judy. I don't want the headache and the heartache of worrying that somebody might wish I was dead. I gave it to them and let them figure out what to do with it. They know about kids.
So,
they know to get a trust. I've told them that. And it's, Carol can attest, we've known each other for years. I had a lot of worry and fretting and losing sleep worrying about exactly what you're talking about. I just took the whole thing off my plate. They're responsible for their own kids. If I decide I want to leave something later for my grandchildren, that's me. But at least I don't have to make that decision now when I'm in the throes of getting all this money and just learning how to live my life as a wealthy person.
So hand them the book.
That's all I'm telling you that I did.
Okay. So hand them the book. Hand them, okay, this is how this is done. Study it. And then hand them the checkbook or show them, take them down and let them do it themselves. But then put in, some of the other stuff that we talked about earlier, the bloodline.
Give them their own currency. Just give them $1 million or $500,000. Give them some and let them worry about it and take it totally off your plate. That's only my comment based on what I personally did.
And the reason that I don't want to do that is because there'll be some of them, not all of them, that would go out there and let's say I just said, here's your $2.5 million. That's your inheritance. You deal with it. Somebody's going to blow that.
That's
they
their
don't,
choice.
They don't.
That's just it.
I don't want to give them that choice because then they're going to be coming back to me wanting another $2.5 million.
And you say no.
Yeah, and that's what there is going to be a point where you say no.
And
if any of them are successor trustees to your trust, I mean, they'll know that you are the only trustee. You and your wife are the only trustees.
No, they won't be.
Okay.
My mother load trust is going to go to charity when I die. Everyone else is going to have a trust, and I'm guessing somewhere in the $2.5 million range, and there'll be no argument when I die. You know, there's no everybody will have, that's what I'm trying to figure out, the best way to make sure that everybody has their own trust. And I guess that would be the best way to do it. I guess it's, you know, I'm going to need a bookkeeper or two or three or five.
Exactly. But, you hired a CPA, exactly.
Yeah.
But also, do you have to do this right now? Can't you, like, give yourself a little bit of breathing room and wait until after it happens and then stuff?
Oh, yeah, yeah. I mean, I'm not ordering all of this stuff tomorrow. And Carol's going, man, who is this guy? Is he nuts? He's got 25 grandkids, you know? I'm trying to figure out the best way to do it, because I don't want to be that guy with a target on his back. And if you read into all of the stuff about people who have won lottery money, you know, people want them dead. They're trying to figure out, okay, well, you know, I want them all to know that here's your $1,000 a month. Come to work if you want more. And, you know, when they, if they go, well, who is this trust? It's like, well, you know, that's the trust that pays you your $1,000 a month. And that's the minimum amount. And then when I do pass away, everybody will be called in and they'll sit down with a lawyer, and each one of them will be handed all of the paperwork that you send me for that trust. And they will have it, and there'll be an instruction sheet in there. Learn this. Don't do anything with any of this money until you have studied this and you understand it. And if they've got questions, I'll send them to somebody that can answer their questions.
You know, one good resource right now just for how do I deal with all this is that the book, My Big Fat Wonderfully Wealthy Life. It's got a lot of...
What was it called again?
My Big Fat Wonderfully Wealthy Life. And I do have a copy of it. If anybody wants one, just send me an email. I'll send you a copy.
You have a digital copy, Carol?
Yes.
Oh, awesome.
Can you get it in print?
I printed it. I don't know if you can get it in print or not. I got it digitally. I just printed it out myself. My husband and I both read it.
I'm not a big fan of digital. I'm still that old school guy.
Nothing wrong with that.
Nothing at all. So, I mean, it's a good primer for... Oh my God! I have all this money. What do I do now?
Okay.
Well, it looks like we do have another caller, Jim. If you have your question answered.
I think so. Thank you.
Okay. Thank you so much. That looks like Charles. Charles, are you still there? Well, okay. Telephone number ending in 4627. You are unmuted, whoever you are. Try hitting *6 again. And now you muted yourself. Let me unmute you. Try it again. *6 again. Okay. Charles,
can you hear me?
Now we can hear you, yes. There we go.
You can hear me? Good morning.
Hi.
How you doing?
We're doing okay. How about you?
Doing well. Good morning, Judy.
Good morning. How are you, sir?
I am doing great. As I was listening to the gentleman talk, you know, none of us have all the answers, but I was going to share with him, if he's still there, what I was going to do with my kids, because I had the same dilemma, but I think I got it solved. The way I'm going to do my kids is I have 6 kids, and I have 6 trusts that I'm going to set up for each one of them. I have so much that I'm going to deposit into each one of their trusts through pass-through accounts after we exchange. And they will, their whole lifetime, this is how I'm going to pass generational wealth, they will only be able to make money off of the principal. They will never be able to touch the principal, but the interest will always be available for them to make more money. Now, none of them will be able to participate unless they are educated. I think one of the main things it's going to be is the education, because once they get comfortable in beginning to make money, even though you have an astronomical amount of money, it will turn minds. Because once they begin to make money off the interest, and they'll be able to make good money off the interest for the investments that we'll be doing together, and as they're schooled and educated, and they begin to make money, I'm going to go from one level to another with them. By the time I leave here, they will be very well educated. They will be making good money. It won't be any squabbles. Now, I know some of them going to fall by the wayside, but I made up my mind they may be a year, two, or three out before they ever get back where they'll begin to take the classes and the education that I'm going to give the ones that really go out there. And I have some that are already, they're going out to the trust already, learning information, seeing what's going on. So once this money comes and I fund their accounts, we're going to begin to invest, and they're going to learn, as I learn, even more how to make money off this interest. They will be making money that they have never made before, and I think it's going to deter a lot of them just being able to just stand off and say, Dad got all of this money, and blah, blah, blah is the case, and blah, 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 and I won't be able to get this until such a, they'll never know what I have. But if they can begin to make money themselves and pull them from the present state that they're in financially, I think you will have better success with them, and they will turn their minds a lot more easier away from you, and it'll begin to focus on them and put the responsibility on them. I just wanted to add that because, you know, that kind of perked my interest when he started talking, because I had the same dilemma, but this is how I'm going to do my kids, all of them. Nobody gets access to any money unless they're willing to be educated with the trust and investment.
That's a good point, Charles. Really good. Good plan.
Yeah, good plan. Very good plan.
And I'm beginning to educate them even now. They understand. He will deal with nobody concerning money aside from a trust. So that puts the pressure on them. They're learning information now about the trust. They're learning now. So when we begin to go to different seminars, investment seminars and whatever, they will already have the foundation of the trust, and they will be so busy putting into play what they have learned and making money on their own. One of my sons, he's going to be doing real estate. Well, there will be enough money in his trust account, and I won't tell them from the beginning how much is in there. The only thing they're going to be busy with, if every time they find out the kind of interest, I mean, they'll be able to figure it out, but I won't tell them up front. Once they understand I got this kind of interest coming off my principal, hey, man, I can flip houses, I can do this, and he's very interested in them, but I got one on fire right now. And it'll catch. Sometimes it takes some of them a later bloomers, but once they understand that my education and information is going to determine my success with my trust, it'll take them away from me, because they got the same thing that I got. It's just on a lower level, but they're experiencing something on a higher level they have never experienced before.
Sounds
and that was my comment.
Planning.
Really good plan.
Very good planning, Charles.
Thank you for sharing, Charles.
Exactly.
You're welcome.
All right. See, we've got one more caller here. Hi, Wayne. How are you doing today?
Hello.
Hi, this is Carol.
Oh. Hi, Carol. I have a question about the settler I know a lady that brought me in, and we have, you know, we have paid our deposit on our trust. We haven't paid the full amount, but I wanted to know if the settler, do you have to go to the place where the settler is? Because my settler is about 4 hours away to settle the trust after you pay for it.
Good. Well, we don't use the term settler. We use the term curator, and I typically suggest that you and your curator are nearby so you can sign some documents together in front of a notary. However, in some situations, it's been very, very difficult for people to do that. So we have made arrangements with the paperwork, so you can do that. I'd give you exactly which instructions, you know, who needs to sign what where and in front of a notary. So we can do that. You just have to keep me aware of it.
Oh, so I can do it here where I live and she can do it where she lives?
Yes. Or you can choose somebody else that lives where you do.
Oh, I can choose. I could tell you I could change it.
Yeah, if we haven't,
okay.
If you just put the deposit on your trust, then we can go ahead and change that part.
Okay, thank you so much. I have to tell some other people I had that question too. Thank you so
okay,
much.
Okay, thank you. Bye bye.
Thank you. Bye bye.
Hi, Daphne. Daphne, you just muted yourself. There you go.
Hi. Yeah. Good morning. There you go. Yeah. I just have a few statements. I agree with the gentleman before. Was that Mr. Charles?
Charles, uh-huh.
Yes, with a lot of what he said. The main thing is, as far as telling people in your family or that you've told them, I know that in the beginning everybody was probably excited and wanted to share the information, and some received it and some did not receive it. However, they need to be educated from the beginning if they show some interest. In my case, if I told them, I gave them calls to get on for them to listen to, and most of them did that faithfully in the very beginning, so they do have some knowledge of it. But for those who didn't want to pay attention or to learn more about this, I dropped it. I can't be more concerned for you than you are for yourself.
Good
point. Exactly. You could be harsh, but
hello.
You know, I love you, but you need to make an effort to be concerned enough about yourself to get the information. And so this was just my way of doing it. I didn't tell members of my family. I told a few friends that, you know, after I was told, and some of them got in, most of them did, and they did get on the calls. And so they know what to do. I told them about the trust, and some of them did that, those that could. And then some will still have to wait until after it's done. But, you know, it's okay. The thing is to do it. I told one member of my family, and I tried to get them to listen to the calls, and they didn't. And I had given them a very, very small portion, just, and they weren't listening. So I said, okay, I need you to send me those notes that I sent you. Send them back to me, please. And they did, because I know they weren't willing to listen to the calls. I can't help you if you can't help yourself.
Good point.
Okay?
Yeah,
so
excellent point.
Do not.
Tough love.
Yeah, you can call it that. But, you know, I love them enough to tell them. But if I see that you're not paying attention, I'm not going to chase after you. I've been in businesses and things long enough now to know that I can't drag you there. You have to want it as well. So that moved me to do a few things, and that is to let them know about seminars, find out the financial advisors or whatever bank sometimes have these seminars that you can go to and get educated about financial investment and stuff. And you have to be careful even there, because don't jump at the first thing you see. Don't tie your money up for 3 years or whatever, and then something else comes along in the meantime, and now you can't do anything because your money is tied up. If you have, and this is something that I found out, the banks have to invite you. If you have at least $2.5 million in U.S. money, there are accounts that the bank can invite you into, and you can get weekly or monthly interest on that. And that's what you want versus 8% or whatever. 8% a year is not bad, don't get me wrong, okay, because that's still some money coming in to you. But you have to be invited into such a platform, okay? The other thing is this, and to me this was very relevant after I listened to it. I don't know if anyone's heard of the ultimate gift, the ultimate life, and the ultimate legacy with James Garner in there. If you have not, please go to your local library and rent that movie. They usually let you have it for 3 weeks. But watch it over and over as many times as you can before you take it back, and then try to share that with someone. Because it also tells you and teaches your children, whoever is going to receive whatever after you go on, how things are done. And it was a very enlightening experience for me, because I did not tell. I have one child, and I did not tell that child. And I did that for a reason. And depending on how people treat you, it's okay, but that doesn't mean you have to give everything to one person. There are foundations out there or other charitable organizations that you really do need to check into before you invest your money into that company or organization, so that you'll know if that organization is working to help people, instead of helping themselves and the people at the top of that organization. So do your due diligence, please, okay? But the ultimate gift is first. The ultimate life is the second one you should watch. And then the ultimate legacy with James Garner in there. Now, there is another one out there called the ultimate gift, but it is not this one. So make sure it's James Garner, okay?
All right, thank you.
And I really believe that that's about all I have to tell you, other than, like I say, get information before you invest your money and don't tie it up for any longer than you have to. Okay? Thank you.
Thank you, Daphne. Appreciate your comments.
That's
great.
Very nice comments, Carol.
You're welcome.
Yeah. Well, folks, it's about 10 after 11, and Judy, we've got maybe half a dozen questions left. Do you want to go on?
Sure, if you do. I have
yeah, absolutely. Okay.
Well, so in view of these last several folks who have shared their comments, I thought we learned something from everybody. I think that's just awesome. And in view of all these questions, how do we document all these trust activities that we're all thinking about doing?
Well, you need to write minutes to document the trust activities. All trustees must sign the minutes. That's going back to, well, what if I have them as a trustee and they don't know about it? No, they have to know about it. If the trust transacted no business in any calendar year, you should write an end-of-year minute documenting that. For instance, many of you have had your trust for several years and they've been sitting in a drawer getting dusty. So at the end of the year, just a regular meeting of the Board of Trustees, it was noted that the trust conducted no business this year, something like that. We also include a few sample minutes on the CD or USB drive you receive with your trust. Our website has a vast offering of minutes and resolutions for your use. It is important to record your actions by writing, you know, keeping up-to-date minutes, keeping a journal of decisions, options, and facts. You want to document, document, document.
Okay. Should I put a limit on how much the trust can spend and on what?
Well, it all depends. Yeah, you can if you want to. For your convenience, you may wish to document all transactions up to an amount that the trustees deem prudent and reasonable with a general minute authorizing the transaction. You might even consider a stamp with the trustee's name and stamp on all receipts. So let's say, okay, I want to protect myself here. I don't want to get too crazy just going out and buying stuff. I think we should limit our purchases from this trust to $10,000. And don't forget, folks, my husband and I have been doing this since the early 90s. We have dealt with folks who just had normal incomes. So this was a way for them to balance what they were doing but still keeping the nest egg intact. So, you know, minute number 7, the trustees decided blah, 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 that they do not have to document any purchases under X amount of dollars.
Okay,
minute number 7, you get a stamp made XYZ trust minute number 7. Make sense? Judy?
Yes. Yeah,
okay.
It does. It does. Okay. So the stamp, the trustee's name on a stamp on all the receipts that come in to the trust for expenditures, that's what that's about, correct?
Yes.
Okay, excellent. Carol, I'm sure you've shared this, but who owns the business trust?
The business trust is an entity unto itself and thus owns itself. You, as trustee, are the manager. You know, granted, we always refer to it as my trust or your trust, but in actuality, it is a trust. It is not your trust. It's not my trust. It's the trust.
Okay.
But
right.
You are the manager. You have total control.
Okay. Can the trust veil be pierced?
People do ask me that. Well, how could the trust even be sued or whatever? Trustees are not personally liable on contracts they signed as trustee for the trust. However, there are ways in which another person can attach trust assets. For example, if you commingled your property or personal funds with trust property funds, you may void the trust. In other words, if it cannot be determined whether you or the trust is the owner of the property, the court can declare that the trust is your alter ego, which is the same person, and the trust veil may be pierced. The trustee shall, in their capacity, not individually, have and assume only such liabilities as may attach to the trust organization's properties and assets. This fiduciary liability shall not jeopardize or affect their individual beneficial holding, if any. So the trustee shall be reimbursed and exonerated by the trust organization for any loss occasioned to them while serving as such to the same extent as with non-interested persons. So the trust can sue and be sued, just like we can sue and be sued. So again, it's like anything else. It's imperative that you document, you stay within the lines, that you don't put the trust in jeopardy by naming it in a situation that might cause it jeopardy. So once again, you know, you just have to be very careful and do what you normally do. And
right.
Stay out of trouble.
Yeah. Which is be sensible and be legal.
Exactly.
Okay. Well, this question kind of folds back into some of the things that we were talking about earlier. Although we all plan to keep a low profile, it's probably going to be noticed that we have money. And, you know, we've all talked about it this last hour. How do we handle those who ask for loans and business, et cetera?
Yeah, you're right. We've talked about it actually considerably today, but it's important. So when asked to do something for somebody, do you just say, sure, no problem? Of course not. I mean, you should never do that when operating your trust. You should always say, I need to meet with the board of trustees and get back to you with their decision. Even if you're the only one on the board of trustees. You know, make notes in a minute, add them to the file before you make a final decision to show the equation that you use to get the answer. Then tell them the decision. So let's see, so Junior comes to you and say, you know, hey Dad, I need $100,000 for this startup business. What do you think? And of course Dad's gonna say, okay, well, I need to take it up with the board of trustees, but I know they're gonna ask for a business plan. Blah, 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 blah. You know, if you decide you want to give it to him, you also have to give him the reasons why. The Board of Trustees determined that it's a great business plan. We think it's a great opportunity, blah, 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 blah. The Board of Trustees will give you the $100,000 in increments or something to that effect. You're not just going to hand the kid $100,000. And so you have to give, as I say, tell them the decision. Then you can say to them that the board has decided to, blah, 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 blah. As an example, a private in the Army cannot commit for the general in the Army without running it up the chain of command to the general. Or an employee cannot commit the owner or the board of directors before meeting with them so they can make a decision. So once again, you're taking this viewed responsibility away from yourself. You're throwing it to the board of trustees. They don't have to know that you are the board of trustees. So you can say yes or no without that, cheapskate wouldn't give me the money.
Right.
You can make that decision, and you can do it, graciously. Either way.
Right, got it. Wow, so, Carol, what is a pour-over will, and why do I need one?
Well, a pour-over will is a particular type of will used in conjunction with the trust. And this kind of will pours any property the deceased still owned at the time of his or her death into the trust that the person set up during his or her lifetime. And this is important for a lot of us. Granted, most of what we own after this RV will be inside of one or several trusts. But a lot of us have homes. We have jewelry. We have art collections. We have gun collections. We have baseball card collections, whatever they are. If they are still in your name at the time of your death, then they are open for probate and estate taxes. This way it pours over into the trust, so there is no estate tax on them, and there's no determining who gets what when. I mean, if it is within the taxable range, it will be taxed, but there's no question as to who gets it because the trust gets it.
Okay.
We provide a pour-over will with our trust as part of our triple play package. A durable power of attorney and healthcare directive are also included in the triple play. And the triple play is just $275 for a single or $350 for a couple. So that's really the end of our questions for today, unless somebody else has another question. But we are still only charging $14.95 to establish a business trust. We do accept all four major credit and debit cards. We also pay a 20% referral fee. Family discounts and additional business trusts are now only $11.95. You know, right now, about a week to complete. That time will obviously be considerably longer post-RV, so we encourage you to act quickly. The business trust comes with easy-to-follow instructions and over 250 pages of business trust legal backup, either on a PDF PDF disk or USB drive to support its existence. And before we sign off, we have another question here.
Great.
Yeah. Jim, you're back.
Hi, Carol. Hi, Judy.
Hi.
Jim again.
Hi.
I just had a thought. Charles, by the way, I think what you were telling me about is a great idea. And as you were saying that, as far as teaching them how to do this, and I'm trying to think about how to teach them and know whether they have studied the handbook so they know how to run a trust. And I just thought that on the last or second to the last page, I'll tape five $100 bills. And when they see that, they're going to call me going, what's this money for? And I'll know they read that book.
There you go.
And if they haven't read the book, I'll just ask for the book back. And
there you go.
They don't get their trust.
Mm-hmm. Absolutely. Good idea. Good idea.
Because, I mean, I understand what Charles was trying to explain, and I greatly appreciate that. But I have a son that would just as soon, even though should be an adult, he would just soon sit and play video games as to go out and better himself. You know what I mean? And those are the things that I'm worried about. I don't want to just give them money and let them become somebody that just sits around and plays video games the rest of their life.
Exactly. Yeah. You want to empower them, not enable them.
Exactly.
Exactly.
How old is this boy?
41.
Oh, dear. You're doing the right thing. That's all I can say. I'm sure Carol agrees.
I do. Absolutely.
Yeah. Okay. At least that way I'll know he read the book, you know.
There you go. Thank you.
And if he didn't find the money, I'll just ask for the book back.
Exactly. Yep.
There you go.
Thank you for that, Jim.
Yeah.
And it looks, anything else, Kim?
Nope. Thank you very much. I appreciate
it. Thank you for your participation.
Mm-hmm.
Okay. Okay. Daphne's back. Hi, Daph.
Hi, Carol. Daph again. Won't be long. This is just quick. I had to step away from the phone, so I didn't really get all of what Mr. Charles said, but I'm going to go back and listen to the call. Also, when I mentioned financial advisor earlier, when you go to the bank, you should have wealth managers that you can speak with. And make sure that if you are planning to work with the bank, make sure that it's a fiduciary part that works on your behalf, but you still have to be careful with that. And as far as the putting them on like the trust and whether they're successor trustees or not, reiterating the educational part, that definitely needs to be a requirement. They need to get educated about what they're doing while they are learning this process. And then the other thing about spending money, they may spend too much, put a spendthrift account in there in the trust, put that clause in there, and just have so much go to them. I'm sure that might have been said earlier, but just to reiterate that. And the other thing is about foundations or when you set your trust up. The foundations I don't know a lot about, but I do have one that I'm working on to set up, and that can help in a lot of cases. And like you said, not just them coming to you, but you have to go to a board to get approval. And that way that kind of takes you out of the equation of whether having to make that decision by yourself, even though you may be the trustee. So just thoughts there. And the other thing is bloodline. There are a lot of trusts that you can put on as a bloodline, and you do have to be careful about that, as we do have some children that will never grow up, and maybe one day they will surprise us, and they'll do that or whatever. But that's it mainly for me. Thank you.
Thank you, Daphne.
You're welcome.
Well, you know, it's pretty clear that so many of you are obviously taking this very seriously and making plans now to either take care of your children and make sure your kids don't blow whatever they get from you. There are so many other avenues to go to. Daphne just mentioned foundations. And while I don't do foundations, I know there are a lot of people out there that do. But be sure to do your due diligence before you commit to anything. As Daphne said, if you're working with a wealth advisor, make sure they're working for you and not on a commission. If they are strictly on commission, they are working for themselves or the bank and not you. So, you know, everybody, we are all hoping this is going to happen sooner or later. I urge you to be prepared. I would obviously love to have your business with a business trust. If you have any more questions, please contact me directly. My name again is Carol Werlius. My phone number is 425-820-8090. And my email is info@indicatorinformation.com. And with that, I will say goodbye. Judy, would you like to say goodbye for today?
I would, sweetie. Thank you so much to everybody that was on the phone. Nice to hear from you, Andrew, in L.A. Haven't seen you, so it's nice to hear from you. And thank you, everybody, for being so kind and gracious.
Thanks, everybody, and go RV. We'll talk to you in a couple weeks. Bye-bye.
Okay. Bye-bye for now.
Bye-bye. Thank you.
Bye-bye, ladies and gentlemen.